Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about fibroids, which actually affects nearly two-thirds of women by the age of 50, which was a shocking number. I couldn't believe that. They're non-cancerous tumors that can vary in size, their growths within the uterus, and they are the leading cause of hysterectomy in women. Unfortunately, they do disproportionately impact women of color. So Black women are diagnosed with fibroids roughly three times as frequently as white women, and they develop them earlier in life. They tend to be larger, more numerous, and they have more severe symptoms. So about a quarter of Black women between the age of 18 and 30 have fibroids. And by age 35, that increases to 60% of Black women. So we're going to dive deep today into what causes fibroids, because these can actually get bigger or show up for the first time during perimenopause, and we'll explain why. We're going to talk about conventional treatments out there, what you can do naturally to help prevent them and hopefully prevent growth or potentially help shrink them as well. So Toni, are we ready to jump into the topic of the day?
Absolutely. You know, I think I was as surprised as you were about how frequently women will experience fibroids. You know, I had no idea that the stats were that high with you know, over two-thirds of women by the age of 50 having fibroids. And even again, unfortunately, seeing those stats around Black women, women of color having even more fibroids as well, and thinking about, you know, why that is too, and that can kind of get into some of the risk factors for white women as well as women of color, and again, we can kind of jump. And do we want to jump into some of those reasons why, those fibroids will show up as we kind of get older? You know, one of the first things I think about is estrogen dominance. And that's something that we've talked about before when it comes to perimenopause, that it's a very common pattern in terms of hormones, of just a higher level of estrogen, especially compared to a progesterone in the body. And that can be impacted by a number of different things, you know, whether you've had experience with taking a birth control pill and having that synthetic form of estrogen over the years, or especially something that I always consider too is the exposure of different synthetic estrogens, xenoestrogens, and other hormone disrupting compounds that are out there. And that's even where, you know, you had a great conversation, Lisa, with Emma Roman from Green at Home, when you guys talked about those kind of endocrine hormone disrupting compounds. And, you know, that can be coming from personal care products, from our makeup, from our lotion, from perfumes, from plastics, from food additives, from laundry and dishwashing detergents, from household cleaners. And then also, you know, thinking about pesticides, herbicides, and different, you know, animal products, depending on whether they have had exposure to hormones themselves as well.
I know it's pretty like scary to hear that list, right? Because we're exposed to so many xenoestrogens are in our environment and we just kind of don't think about it. So I think stepping back and looking at what are we using on our skin, in our house, for food. So definitely listen to episode 65. And then going along, Tony, with what you're saying about, yeah, the estrogen dominance. So we also think that happens, you know, in perimenopause because progesterone levels are usually the first to drop. So your estrogen is relatively higher. So that can contribute. Estrogen's like that growth hormone, right? We know in pregnancy, we get bigger, our breasts get bigger, things are growing, tissues, et cetera, moles might get bigger. So that estrogen feeds the growth of the fibroids in the uterus. And then even with weight gain, sometimes that can happen in perimenopause for various reasons, which we've talked about before, but fat cells can make estrogen in males and in females. Obviously, males aren't getting fibroids because they don't have any uteri, I guess would be the plural there. I don't think I've ever said uteri. I've never had to say more than one. Okay. There's a first for everything. But looking at, yeah, if the weight's going up, then those fat cells are metabolically active. They're causing inflammation. They can make more estrogen, which can then feed the growth of fibroids that maybe were there and not causing issues before perimenopause, but all of a sudden, you know, they're getting bigger, right? And when the fibroids are bigger, you can have, you know, heavy flow, obviously, low iron levels. We'll get into some signs and symptoms as we just cover a few more of the causes.
For sure. And you know, thinking about kind of weight gain, also thinking about body composition, it's not necessarily just about your weight, but it's also about that balance of your body fat versus your lean muscle mass or your metabolically active tissue or just your fat-free mass, including kind of your bones and other connective tissue in the body. So you may not necessarily have any concerns about your weight, but then the question is, you know, if you're not having an optimal body fat percentage, you know, you can be something like, I've heard the term before, you know, skinny fat person, mm-hmm. where again, you don't necessarily have any overweight issues, but just having, you know, more of those fat cells can, again, like you said, be more metabolically active, more producing that estrogen and impacting that balance of estrogen and progesterone. So whether it's, again, that kind of weight gain, higher body fat, or issues with being overweight or obese. Definitely when we're talking about any kind of hormone imbalance, a really important piece to think about is our liver detoxification pathways. So if those aren't working optimally or keeping up with all of the work that the liver needs to do, then absolutely that can definitely play a role. And so when, especially thinking about that disparity and that higher risk of women of color having more fibroids, you know, something that I always kind of keep in mind is that when there is a disparity with any kind of socioeconomic status and thinking about more exposure to pollution, more impact on the liver. That's always something that I keep in mind. But then also something that that you found, Lisa, when we kind of looking at different impacts on fibroids, is this idea of fibroids being impacted by vitamin D deficiency and low levels of vitamin D. And that's where looking at the color of our skin does make a difference, because the melanin in the skin can impact how, you know, your skin is able to take in those UV rays and create vitamin D. Mm-hmm. So when people have a darker skin tone, that's where they can be more at risk of having vitamin D deficiency or low vitamin D.
For sure. Yeah, there's a statistic we came across that vitamin D deficiency is 10 times more, it happens 10 times more among African American women than other cultures. And that African American women have 3 times the prevalence of the fibroids as well. And it's looking at how does vitamin D impact fibroids? So they're really starting to study that. I think more research is being done on that, but in vivo and in vitro, so in, you know, in live animals and humans and in the petri dish, studies have shown that vitamin D inhibited uterine fibroid growth. So it helps to stop it from getting bigger. And there's actually lower levels of vitamin D receptors on the fibroids themselves compared to the lining of the uterus, the myometrium. So I don't really know how that translates, but I think they're really looking at researching this more in depth. And we know vitamin D is a pro-hormone as well. So it's really turning out to be something that we all want to get tested for, to see what are our levels and then to optimize them, not just be in the acceptable range, but talk to your healthcare practitioner how to optimize them, because they can influence everything from bone, immune health. We're seeing in the research now, and we knew that before when it came to flus, for example. Respiratory infections. We're looking at it now in terms of fibroids, even autoimmune disease risks. So it's such an important vitamin or pro-hormone, if you will.
Absolutely. So, you know, what else is involved when it comes to fibroids? And, you know, some women may be thinking, okay, well, if all of these women are having fibroids, you know, how would I know if I have a fibroid? There are different signs and symptoms that can pop up. Definitely with fibroids, there is a link with heavier menstrual bleeding and periods that last longer, especially lasting more than a week. With that heavy bleeding and a longer period, that can lead to more iron deficiency, anemia, and more fatigue. Physically, a lot of women will experience more pressure in the pelvic area or even pelvic pain, and that can also include pelvic pain during intercourse. There can be more frequent urination or difficulty emptying the bladder, especially if that fibroid is impacting the bladder. You can also experience more constipation or bloating, you know, having kind of just a protruding belly or abdomen, and also even experiencing more backache or leg pains if, again, the fibroid is impacting that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I commonly see women come that are anemic. They're totally exhausted. Mm-hmm. Their menstrual flow is so heavy. And their fibroids can get really big, right? They can get up to like grapefruit size or bigger. And then you're looking at that number of, you know, how many people can have fibroids by the age of 50, 3/4. Well, maybe some of these women don't have severe symptoms, right? But they actually have like smaller size fibroids that may be picked up on routine imaging, maybe for some other concerns. So I don't think all of those women are getting extreme, you know, anemia and fatigue, but just with that estrogen dominance, especially in perimenopause, and then all the xenoestrogens, you may have some small ones that you might not even know you have, right? Because you're not necessarily going to get a transvaginal ultrasound, which is the way they can actually view the fibroids, unless you have some of these signs and symptoms. That's really, really bothersome.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, without that visualization by the ultrasound, you wouldn't necessarily get a sense of, again, definitely the size or even kind of the location, because there are different locations that the fibroid can be along the uterus. It can be on the outside surface or subserosal, can be intramural within the muscular wall of the uterus, or can be a submucosal kind of where it kind of goes bulging into inside of the uterus or in the uterine cavity. So, and it can impact women in different ways. Again, kind of all of those signs and symptoms. It also can impact fertility. So it can, block fallopian tubes or block the cervix. It can reduce where, you know, implantation can occur after fertilization of the egg. And there is a small increased risk of having miscarriage as well. And depending on where it is, that's where, if there's a larger fibroid or depending on location, that's where with fertility, and even if fertility isn't being impacted, that's where some women are recommended to have a C-section instead of a vaginal birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And then from a medical perspective as well, there's various ways to, you know, get rid of or prevent the growth of the fibroids. So I guess the least invasive, although it sounds invasive, is the uterine fibroid embolization. So that's basically just starving the fibroid of its blood supply, because anything that grows needs a blood supply. So this is actually, they call it non-surgical because it's an outpatient procedure. So you don't have to stay in the hospital, but they put an incision in your upper thigh and they put a catheter into the femoral artery in your thigh there. They also use an x-ray at the same time to locate the blood supply to the fibroid itself, or if there's more than one, to all of them. And then they inject these little particles that are tiny into the vessels to kind of to block those vessels from delivering blood, so then it can't bring nutrients to the fibroid for it to grow. So that really helps to shrink the fibroids. So they basically shrivel up, right? Mm-hmm. The next step up would be a myomectomy, where they actually remove the fibroids themselves if they're not too tangled up in the uterine tissue. So the uterus would stay in, but they'd take out the fibroids only. Unfortunately, Black women during the myomectomy are 2 times more likely to get complications like excess blood loss, scar tissue, and fertility issues from this treatment. And then the most, if you will, I guess, extreme measure to get rid of fibroids is to also get rid of the uterus via a hysterectomy. So they take out your uterus, maybe they take out your ovaries, maybe not, but they take out where the fibroids are attached or inside. And Black women are 2.5 times more likely to get a hysterectomy than white women or other cultures too. So I'm wondering with that, yeah, are the fibroids bigger, more invasive? Sometimes with healthcare, there might not be the same options presented sometimes. So that is a big disparity though, unfortunately.
It is. And I think one of the questions that that different groups are asking is whether, you know, Black women and women of color are being offered non-surgical approaches as much as white women. So, you know, it is important to be aware of all of those options and all of those treatments, not only kind of conventionally, but then also thinking of not only of prevention, but also some natural treatment options too, which are something that, you know, we always offer as naturopathic doctors. So not only for prevention, but also for treatments, again, like I said, something really important to look at is supporting the liver detoxification pathways, especially if we're looking at that hormone balance. Again, we've talked in different episodes, I'll definitely link to some other episodes where we're talking about this idea of estrogen dominance and relative progesterone deficiency. Something that you may want to look at is getting not only blood work to look at what your hormone balance is, but something like the Dutch test, which is a dried urine test that really is a comprehensive look at your hormones, and also even gives us an idea of how well your hormones are being broken down. But supporting that detoxification and elimination of our hormones is really key. So this is where we look at supporting the liver with different foods and nutrients that can really help those enzyme pathways to function at their best. You know, things like garlic, onions, beets, cruciferous veggies, you know, your cauliflower, cabbage, kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. Something like green tea can be really, really important, as well as there's some different herbs, things like turmeric, things like milk thistle and yellow dock. Those can all be really supportive. Another key is to really make sure that you're getting rid of that higher level of estrogen really efficiently. And the best way to do that is to make sure that you are having regular bowel movements. So that's really key. Making sure you have enough water, fiber. Again, we'll link to our episode about constipation to see, especially if you need some help on that front.
Yeah, definitely supporting the liver, the gut is really key too. We then obviously want to avoid also the inputs of those xenoestrogens. So you can listen to episode 65 on how to do that. But at the very basic, avoid plastics. And in that episode, we even talk about how like the BPA-free plastics still may not be the best option because they don't really know the effects of BPS or some of these non-BPA ingredients as well. And then looking at alcohol, we know that fuels estrogen dominance. It throws off our blood sugar and our hormones and our detoxification pathways. So that's just going to clog up your liver and not let it do what it's supposed to do in terms of eliminating the excess or bad types of estrogens, supporting a healthy weight so you don't have those excess fat cells, especially, you know, around the organs in the midsection. Those can be the more inflammatory estrogen promoting fat cells that can feed the growth of the fibroid. So it's not like, you know, lose a ton of weight, but it's just making sure you don't have that inflammatory fat burden around your midsection too. You know, exercise, reducing stress. We know these all impact our hormones in a healthy, beneficial way, impact our weight as well in a healthy way. So we look at it from a holistic approach. And then if you are low, for example, in progesterone, you may consider progesterone supporting herbs like Vitex or otherwise known as Chase Tree, for example, or a bioidentical progesterone cream if indicated for you to make up for some of that deficiency that then fuels the estrogen dominance.
Absolutely. And especially if there is, if you do have any heavy bleeding or long periods, you want to make sure you're replacing that iron if your iron is deficient. You know, unfortunately, we can really get into this really vicious cycle of having low iron, having heavier periods, and then that leads to lower iron, and then that lower iron leads to actually even heavier periods because it impacts our clotting. So being able to stop that vicious cycle with getting in some extra iron is really important. And especially at that point, you'll often need to look at really supplementing with a really good, well-absorbed and really available form of iron.
It's not uncommon too, where women need iron injections, or sometimes they've even needed blood transfusions because they're just so anemic and so weak. So we definitely don't want it to get to that. So you're most likely getting your hemoglobin tested, but get your ferritin level tested too. And yeah, Tony, you brought up a good point because a lot of women don't realize if they have low iron, they can have heavier periods, right? They think, okay, if I have heavier periods, I have low iron, but it does impact that clotting and you get definitely a heavier flow. And even if your thyroid is underactive, we can link to that episode too. But hypothyroidism can contribute to heavier flows. You actually need the right level of iron for your thyroid to work, as well as other nutrients. So it's all connected. So we're looking at all of the organ systems, ovaries, adrenals, thyroid, gut, liver. You know, we're complicated beings, but this is how we stay healthy by addressing all of these multifactorial causes.
Absolutely. Because, you know, if you're having issues with your thyroid and that's impacting your metabolism, then yeah, you may have increased weight or increased body fat than maybe really kind of ideal for you. So yeah, it's all connected. And something that I always really consider when it comes to any kind of issues with digestion, reproductive area, is to think about using topical castor oil. It can be a really gentle way of supporting proper circulation, liver function, reducing inflammation, you know, especially if you're, you know, just applying it topically on the abdomen, a lower abdomen. Over the long term, it has been shown to really help to promote the reduction of cyst formation, fibrotic tissue from forming as well. So that can be a really nice way of supporting that healing, as well as if there is any kind of bloating or pain that is involved with the fibroid, it can help to reduce that as well.
Yes, some great tips there. And we talked about the liver detoxification, the cruciferous vegetables. There are actually supplements too that contain the active components from the cruciferous vegetables like indole-3-carbinol and DIM, which helps with the estrogen detox. So if you get rid of the excess and bad types of estrogens, then you're less likely to feed the growth of those fibroids as well. So naturally, there's a lot we can do to prevent. And, you know, there are ways to help prevent those fibroids from growing further as well. If you're balancing that estrogen by detoxifying it, supporting the progesterone, supporting the liver, etc.
Absolutely. So it can really be a combination based on really what your experience is. And it doesn't also, I think it's important to note that you don't have to choose one over the other. You can look at more conventional treatments as well as supporting, you know, any reduction of fibroids that you have now and preventing them in the future.
Yeah, because you could go and get them removed, right? But then who's to say they're not going to grow back if you haven't changed kind of why they were there in the first place? And yes, genetics can play a role, but we know all of our lifestyle factors turn genes on and off and can then, you know, increase our risk even further.
Yeah, so you can really, you know, address your fibroids right now, as well as look at the why and the root cause behind it too.
For sure. Well, I think that was a good deep dive into fibroids. Did we cover everything, Tony, you think?
I think we did, Lisa. So let's switch gears and let's talk about our super mom moments, our mama mess ups, and we can talk about our mama must-haves for this week.
Sure. I know those are tongue twisters, but we've said them so much now that for us it's easy. So what's your super mom moment? I better not mess these up.
So my super mom moment for the week is, you know, we had a really lovely weekend. It was wonderful weather out here in Calgary. And we got invited to visit with a friend who's at a house where there was a trampoline outside in the yard. So Frankie loves jumping, and we've actually been kind of considering getting a trampoline. So this was a really lovely opportunity to not only visit friends outside in, you know, beautiful weather, but also for Frankie to really have fun on the trampoline. And I jumped into the trampoline and I was jumping with Frankie. We were in there together. It was a super fun time. So it was just really fun to be with her and, you know, and kind of be a kid with her too. And not just be, you know, mom, but we had a lot of fun outdoors jumping around there on the trampoline. And I can't remember the last time I had been on a trampoline. So it was really a fantastic time.
Nice. I love that. So yeah, with kids, you know, it forces us to play. Sometimes it's like, really, do I have to pretend to be a dinosaur again? But when it's activities like this, it can be really fun. It's like, yeah, when would you have jumped on a trampoline if you didn't have Frankie and you were getting exercise too? So that definitely is a super mom moment. Way to go.
Thank you. So now, Lisa, I know you are an awesome mom to Stuart, but do you have a mama mess up that you can share with us?
I do. Yeah. Right as I'm looking around where I'm recording in her spare room, if anyone saw this, they'd be like, oh my God, there's like boxes and bags of old clothes, boxes of old toys that Stuart doesn't play with anymore, lots of old books piled up. And normally I'm good about getting rid of stuff, but when, you know, there was the lockdown and Salvation Army, you know, Once Upon a Child, where you give things, sell things off to, have been closed, I've really gotten behind on decluttering as Stuart's getting older. I'm sure everybody's aware of how quickly they grew out of clothes and toys and books. So it's definitely overwhelming right now. So that's on the list to do this week, is to start to drop things off, to give things away to other kids in the neighborhood. I debated a garage sale, but that just sounds like a little bit too much work. So,
yeah,
so that's my mess up cluttered house.
Oh, and you are not alone, Lisa. I feel like our house is kind of in a perpetual state of trying to get rid of all that stuff as they get as they get older too. So you're doing great.
Thanks. Thanks. And then Tony, what's been your mama must have? What are you loving right now?
What I'm loving right now is, it took me a while to find this book. I've heard great things about it. And then once I started reading it, I could not stop. It's the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle. Fantastic book. You can also get it as an audiobook. It was just such a wonderful read. She's just so great with words, just so eloquent and really like inspirational and motivating too. She like shares her story of all of her struggles in her life as a mom and with her marriage and now in her second marriage and dealing with, you know, eating disorder, addiction, but also looking at really, you know, how to be the best mom and how to raise her kids, raise her daughters, raise her son. And so I just found it so wonderful. I highly recommend it to all moms out there to really look at Untamed by Glennon Doyle. How about you, Lisa?
Yeah, I love Untamed. I listened to the audio book a while back and it just blows your mind, right? It's kind of shocking how, you know, there are those stereotypes in terms of raising boys and girls, and it just, really opens up your world to all of that. So really good must have. Thanks for sharing, Tony. Mm-hmm. And mine has to do with reading too. So at the beginning of 2021, so I'm doing the 21 in 2021, which means I'm reading at least for 21 minutes a day, every day. And I've been doing that after Stuart is put down, whether I put him down or my husband puts him down for bed. And I've blown through 4 books already and I'm on my 5th book and I'm loving it. I just started Girl on a Train. Hopefully it's not going to affect my sleep because I don't really read I love thriller murder kind of stories, but sometimes that can impact my sleep, but I'm totally sucked in and I'm loving it. And I've been getting all the books from those little libraries on the corner. You know how people have those little stands where they give away their books for free and you just put your books in there too. So there's been some amazing reads in the neighborhood and I have a nice stack that I'm going to go through. So I loved reading growing up. I kind of moved away from it after Stuart was born, but I've made it a priority and I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I think you'll really enjoy Girl on the Train. I don't think it'll be, you know, too nightmare inducing for you.
Good.
I remember reading it a few years ago. So yeah, definitely.
Great.
Oh, awesome. That's so great. I love that both of us are just like taking on reading more this year. And that's both of our mama must-haves for this week.
That's a good escape for the mind, right? We can't really go too many places. So it's nice to kind of visualize. The other books were more visuals, but so that's really enjoyable. And then Tony, what do you have in the works? Do you have any events coming up? Anything you want to share?
Yeah, I am doing my next hypnobirthing group class for expecting parents looking for increased calm, confidence, and comfort during labor and birth. And that starts on April 1st. So you can go to the website hypnobirthingcalgary.com to register for that. How about you, Lisa? What are you up to?
Yeah, so I'm launching my next Wild Collective 10-month virtual program in fall 2021. So if anyone wants to get on the wait list and be the first to know when it opens, because there's only a limited number of women that are accepted into the program, the website or the sign up link is at wildcollectivetoronto.com. So check that out. We're getting great feedback. I have 2 groups going right now and they're blowing me away with their transformations and their feedback. So check that out.
Awesome. So thanks so much for joining us today, everyone. Again, you can find the show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can email us and connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe, leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.